This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll take a look at the history and future of the Anna Louise Inn, which recently moved to a new home. But first, earlier this month, the New York Stock Exchange suspended trading in its main market for 3.5 hours because of a technical issue. The shutdown jarred investors, but it did not have the impact it would have had 20 years ago. Joining us for a look at how market trading takes place today and how much has changed during the last two decades are Madeline Matlock, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager with Pioneer Investments, James Miller, Chairman and Investment Advisor at Bartlett, and Local Financial Advisor Chris DeSimio with Wells Fargo Financial Advisors. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jim and Madeline and Chris, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Happy to be here.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to see all of you. Again, the phone number to join the conversation, 513-419-7100. And Chris, what's the market doing today? It's been quite a bumpy ride lately.
It's not doing well again today. It's been a kind of a challenging week, even though some of the numbers released today were a little better than expected. The new home sales, though, were a little lighter. In fact, they dropped, and that put kind of a little bit of a chill on the market, though it wasn't an instant drop. It's just been more of a, I guess you'd have to call it the summer malaise.
Maybe a drip, drip, drip kind of thing, as opposed to an all at once.
And the volume's not especially heavy. We're really kind of running into the summer doldrums.
513-419-7100 to join us. And, you know, I know that they're saying that what happened at the New York Stock Exchange was a technical problem, Chris. Now, have they ever gotten more specific as to what caused this outage?
Well, Jim and Madeline would be good people to answer that question.
Yeah, Jim and Madeline, what have you heard?
You folks manage billions of dollars, and, you know, when you push a button, you just assume that something's going to happen on the other end of that.
Something good is going to happen, right?
Well, a lot of people are saying that this is just nothing to have in much concern about, because after all, the New York Stock Exchange now represents only 30% of the volume, the stock trading volume each day, whereas when they had the May Day crash on May 6, 2010, it wasn't a matter of it being closed for 4 hours. It was a matter of, within a period of 13 minutes, the market, a lot of companies managed to just fall through the floor. The market fell essentially like 600 points on the Dow. I mean, it might have even been more than that.
Yeah, it may have been more, but it was fast, and then it bounced back.
It bounced back, but you know, to see a company like Procter & Gamble, for instance, trading at $82 a share at 25 after 2 in the afternoon, and then 7 or 8 minutes later, seeing it trade $28, $29 a share—that's just not normal. That's a real problem.
Yeah, that does make you blink, doesn't it? Madeline, what's your take on this latest outage?
Well, what the stock exchange said was that it was a router that went bad, which kind of doesn't sound right to me, because usually they build a lot of redundancies into these systems, and you really shouldn't have everything go down for 3 hours because one router goes bad. But I don't know. I'm not on the floor. I don't watch how this works all the time. The thing that was interesting to watch, though, was that stocks continued to trade through that whole period, which tells you, as Jim mentioned, how much trading takes place off the exchange these days, and that liquidity was not really impaired by any of the accounts I've seen.
You know, it's interesting, Madeline and Jim and Mark, when you consider that back in the old days when you would see when TV networks first started covering things live from the floor of the exchange, it was a pretty crowded place, lots of jostling and hustle and
activity,
bustle.
Activity and hubbub.
Sometimes it seems that there are barely enough people down there to start a fight. I mean, it's thinned out dramatically. Is that really a sign of how much of the trading is now done off the exchange?
Yes, it is. The volume off the exchange is far, far greater than the trade on the exchange. A few years ago, the New York Stock Exchange, the American Stock Exchange, which incidentally used to be called the Curb Exchange,
the Curb Exchange.
They were trading on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
These were companies that weren't large enough to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And then Cincinnati had an exchange, which ultimately became the Midwest Stock Exchange.
In the old Dixie Terminal.
Right. Yeah, it merged with Chicago's exchange and then the Pacific Stock Exchange. But now it's there could be hundreds of essentially exchanges, but they don't involve people.
Yeah, but,
they involve computers.
Yeah, but Jim and Madeline, does this mean, to what extent have individual investors been affected by trading moving away from this open outcry or this, you know, this bid, this auction system that exists on the, you know, with live people, as that has been replaced by electronic trading? Have individual investors been helped or hurt?
Generally hurt. Before, a central marketplace like the New York Stock Exchange, it's where buyers and sellers come together. And the highest bid and the lowest offering price will ultimately come together. It's like a double-edged auction market. The highest bidder and the lowest offer, that's where the trade will take place. But now you don't have that. You have computers doing that. And in a matter of they're flat, what they call flash trades or high-frequency trading, computers match the buyers and the sellers. And unfortunately, there's still some human intervention in those computer trading, in computer trading.
So the New York Stock Exchange is still, it's still an auction format. NASDAQ, though, is completely, that's dealer-based, right? That's
right.
Just you put information in, I want to buy this much, and the computer works out the rest of the deal?
Yes, if somebody's willing to accept
terms,
the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the real issue, too, is this ongoing discussion about whether or not some of the computers get a quick look at the trades coming in before they actually hit the exchange and get a chance to trade ahead. And we're talking fractions of a second and thousands of shares, which means that a person who places a trade in the normal way may be disadvantaged simply because somebody else was able to see what they were going to do and trade ahead of it.
The speed's even more incredible than that. It's a nanosecond, 1 million times faster than it takes one to blink one's eye. It's a computer,
yeah.
And there's not human intervention in a lot of these trades.
Yeah,
the computer just executes the trade.
And it's not as if Michael Lewis needed to make any more money from all his other works, you know, The Big Short, Liar's Poker, among other things. But his book, The Flash Boys, I think he called it, caused quite a stir last year with this electronic trade. But again, bringing it back to an average individual investor then, does this mean that if someone says, you know, I'd like to buy 100 shares of XYZ company today, does that mean that they, is there something they can do to offset that? Or if you already own 100 shares of XYZ, is there something you need to take a look at with, you know, now in the light of the technical glitches which seem to pop up from time to time?
Well, they can place a limit. For instance, if they don't want to pay any more than $25 per share for a stock, they can say that. They could say, I'll pay no, they're buying the stock at $25. It won't be executed unless it comes down to $25.
Same thing with selling. You can put a floor on your sale, too. I don't want to sell for any less than this amount.
Correct.
Is that right, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a limit order.
Right.
Is that something that professional investors such as you and Madeline do frequently, use limit orders?
Well, it can be.
Sure. Yeah. It sure. It depends on the expertise of your trading department or how firmly you're going to hold to the price. But a lot of professionals will do that. But they have to be very careful because if you're trading in any size, if you put in an order like that, you're signaling something you may not want to signal.
Mm-hmm.
So walk us through the process. You want to sell 100 shares. You go online at one of those broker sites. Where do things go from there? It gets entered into the system, and then what happens?
Well, most people that would be buying in round lots like that or small amounts, mm-hmm. they probably talk to a professional at a brokerage firm.
Yeah.
And that the order would be entered there. But this program trading or these flash trades, those are executed by people whose names you'll never know. You'll never see them.
Oh, no. That's comforting.
They don't call them dark pools for nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point, Madeline. What is a dark pool? I've heard that word tossed around. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's a way to keep your trades off the exchange so other traders can't see what you're doing. So you're basically you're doing curve trading. You're a group of investors that are buying and selling, and you're doing it off the exchange in a way where it's not visible, except inside your group.
Yeah. Now, did this kind of thing used to have rules against it, or this has changed over the last 15, 20 years, hasn't it?
Go ahead, Jim.
They used to call it front running, and it is essentially breaking the law. But what you do is a lot of the large brokerage firms, investment houses, have these dark pools, and they're anything but illuminated. They can do almost anything. They can send a trade that might not have been executed on the exchange. They can take it and have a proprietary position in it. In other words, they can sell shares they might have at a higher price than the stock's trading on an exchange. But they make, most of the money's made just billions of shares with 1 or 2 cents a share, maybe up to a nickel a share, something that a lot of people wouldn't call a lawyer and try to sue the firm for. But a lot of trades are routed to a dark pool if they don't get executed by one of the computers, for instance.
Jim, back in the 20, 25 years ago, you picked up the phone, you called a broker if you wanted to sell 100 or 200 shares or a smaller amount. Is it still common for people to execute by the phone, or has online trading just become the most common way of doing business? Do we know how that works?
I think that, well, a lot of individuals retain a money manager, and a money manager would have a trading room and would talk, if there were bonds or over-the-counter stocks, would talk to another brokerage firm that might make a market in those stocks, be buyers and sellers of those stocks. That's how I think a great deal of the wealth is managed today. The trading we're talking about, the computer trading, is this high-frequency trading. They're just front-running groups of people. They'll never know who the people are to get an edge on them.
Like Madeline was saying, you don't know who.
Nope.
Madeline, you spend a good deal of your time focusing on international securities. And, of course, China's been in the news. Greece has been in the news. Do foreign markets have these kinds of issues in their exchanges, or do shares of foreign stocks trading in the United States, are they also kind of caught up in some of these items?
Well, I think you have a group of very, very large international banks who do a lot of stock trading. And they all are part of these exchange groups, these dark pools, and these flash trading systems. So especially in the developed markets, markets like in Europe or to a lesser extent in Japan, a lot of the trading takes place pretty much the same way. The European and U.S. stock markets are generally considered to be pretty much one animal. The trading times are different, but so much happens off the exchange outside of trading hours that it doesn't really matter.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. It's Friday, July 24th. My guest this afternoon, Madeline Matlock, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager with Pioneer Investments, James Miller, Chairman and Investment Advisor at Bartlett, and Local Financial Advisor Chris DeSimio with Wells Fargo Financial Advisors. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And so, Chris, from my outsider's perspective here, the two biggies are the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ Exchange. Is that correct?
Well,
and then all the little variations that fall in between, or
There are computers out there that are essentially exchanges.
They're markets themselves.
And some of these computers are, there were cable lines installed between the New York Stock Exchange and Chicago. There are a lot of Tony Soprano would not go into some of the areas where there are computers in in New Jersey. But they all try to get very close to it.
Sure, because of the physical advantage of being the closer you are physically to the exchange, the less time it takes for that information to flow.
And we're talking in nanoseconds. And see, you got to make this switch. You got to have to realize that these aren't human beings that are actually putting in these trays.
So that's what I got to get used to.
As soon as it receives instructions, it just goes right away.
Well, and you know, there are a lot of good books about this. Simon Winchester, The Men Who United the States, wrote one of the topics he talked about was what the communications revolution was all about. And of course, it was really about money in a lot of part. And so, the telegraph was a boom. A great advantage to financial services, people who were trading stuff, whether it was anything, any commodity or shares of bank stocks in the early 1800s, because if you knew that a ship had come in and that a certain commodity was actually on the dock in Baltimore, and you knew that there was going to be more of that stuff, then you knew that you might, its price would likely go down. So the faster you get information, the transcontinental telegraph is done the same way between San Francisco and New York. It was the same thing. It was all about getting information and then money back and forth.
And this has all just occurred in the last couple of decades. It's just advanced so quickly. Technology is pretty amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But see, if the computer sees a big trade to buy a company XYZ at 21.38, what they might do, what this computer might do just automatically, is put a sell in at 22 and then start buying small amounts to force the stock up to 22 and then just dump, say tens of thousands of shares after driving the stock price up.
A computerized pump and dump.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, instead of people, it's the computers doing
it. And once they get one that works and some other computer figures it out, then all they have to do is tweak the trading rule and try something else.
So where does that leave people who like to do their own fundamental analysis of a company and things as old-fashioned as price-earnings ratio and dividend coverage and rates of dividend growth? Where does that leave us? Where does that leave traditional folks who want to build an income stream and not worry about it?
Oh, Chris, you're living in the dark ages.
Is that better than a dark pool?
Yeah, somebody asked me once about index funds and the growth in the amount of assets that are invested in index funds. And, I have to remind folks that index funds can only exist because there are active investors who do fundamental research and try to buy companies where the stocks are cheap compared to the value of the company. Without that, index doesn't make any sense. And all this trading that goes on doesn't make any sense.
Madeline, what happened on the New York Stock Exchange earlier this month? We had something simpler happen on the NASDAQ in 2013, and then there was the flash crash back in 2010. And I've read some experts who say, this is just the new norm. The markets are so reliant on automation and electronics nowadays. We should just get used to this. Do you think this is something that we might see more of in the years to come?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're right. I mean, just think what would happen if we had an electricity outage like when we had the great blackout of the eastern U.S. Everything comes to a screeching halt. This is all automated. It all depends on everything working perfectly all the time. And you also have to worry about hacking. You have to worry about somebody actually figuring out how to get into these systems and rigging them worse than they already are.
Yeah, but when this occurred earlier this month, United Airlines on the very same day had a major technical glitch of its own.
And the Journal's website went down.
Yeah, and the Journal's website.
All on the same day.
That was what everybody said. It's too much coincidence here. It has to be hacking. And it didn't turn out to be the case, but hacking is a real concern.
I should mention something that could be very dangerous heretofore. Putting in stop losses, say buying a company ABC again at $23 a share and saying, okay, I'm going to be stopped out. I'm going to sell the stock if it goes to 20 or below. I just want to...
You've set your limits.
I want to cut my losses. Well, people that did that during the flash crash in May of 2010 lost their shirt, because if you put in a stop loss at 20 for stock that you bought at 23... If it goes down, if the market went down so quickly and so precipitously that a lot of those stop losses weren't executed, when it goes to 20, it becomes a market order to sell. But the stock could have gone from 20 3/8 to 15. And that happened. There were a lot of stocks that went to zero, and they became market orders to sell. Well, there's also, you say, well, I can protect that. I'll have a stop limit loss, stop loss limit. So you'll put in a limit at 20. So I'm not going to accept less than $20 a share. That trade might never get executed, and you could end up getting, you know, a few dollars a share for the stock. So that is not, if there's going to be a crash like that.
Yeah. With all your expertise, Jim and Madeline, are either of you aware of any company whose shares trade on exchange that suffered a glitch? Are either of you aware of a company which postponed or eliminated its dividend or was late in sending its dividend out because of an exchange glitch?
I'm not aware of
that.
In other words, it just didn't matter. If you were a long-term buy and hold investor, it just didn't matter. If you're trying to trade in and out of something, then this would be a big issue.
Correct.
Right. And if you're a real long-term holder, if you're buying a stock that you think you're going to keep for 3 to 5 years, even if somebody in a dark pool front runs you and you spend a few cents more for the share, that's not going to matter to you. But it does matter if you need liquidity right now.
Chris, we can talk about, you know, market function as being a big concern, but there are also a lot of global issues. What's happening in China, for instance? I mean, that was a third of the market's value in a month's time?
Well, in fact, the Chinese market, and you know, Madeline's the expert there, but China had doubled. The Chinese market had doubled rather quickly, and then even more quickly in the last month or so, lost 30% of its value. That's that kind of volatility, I would think. And Jim, you also would know about this. It kind of chases money off to the sidelines, doesn't it?
That's frightening. Now, the volatility, this isn't good news. Okay, people thought that the volatility in 2007 and 2008 during the housing debacle, the bond, just every liquid security class had a tough time,
yeah.
Even bonds. What you have now, the volatility is up 40% since then, just with this program trading we're talking about, flash trading. 40% increase in volatility, not just volume. Volume is much higher than that, much higher increase.
And Madeline, what I've heard is that China is facing a similar problem to what the U.S. faced in 1929. Before the market crash in 29, and that China has too much stock being purchased with borrowed money. Was that the primary cause of what's happened to them?
Well, I think it was two things. The first is it's called the A-share market, and it was really opening up the stock market to the average person in China, which it had not been open before. So these were novices trading stocks. And as you mentioned, to a large extent, many of them were trading stocks with borrowed money, and they didn't really know anything about the companies they were buying and selling. They were playing a game. They were swapping with each other and trying to get ahead of each other on buys and sells and see who could get the best price. But as far as actually being a fundamental investor, that was not happening. So when the government decided that the borrowed money that backed up the shares was getting to be too big of a piece of the value of the market and put a halt to it, that's when the market started to crash.
What about the situation in Greece? Oh, go ahead, Madeline.
Well, I was just going to say it's kind of, I think the Chinese officials didn't appreciate how this would work when they took the genie out of the bottle with opening this share trading up with people, and now they have a much more sober view of how careful they're going to have to be.
And what about the situation in Greece, Madeline? Where do you see that going?
Oh, gosh. Who knows?
That's I mean, it's been up one week, down the next, yeah.
Yeah, but it's obvious that the Greeks now, including the Greek government, which is the important entity here, understands that the Europeans are dead serious. If they are going to give Greece another financial lifeline and help them restructure their debt so they can afford to pay it off, which now they cannot, they are going to have to do what the European group wants them to do. Now, as to whether they can actually do it and as to whether that's the right formula for Greece, I don't know. In the long term, it's probably not, but they can change it later. But at this point, I think they are sitting down and really talking the real terms of what really has to happen now and not all the posturing that was going on before.
What's the impact on the U.S. investor, though, from Greece? I mean, is this something that's really going to have a big effect on our markets?
I think the only way it would have a big effect on our markets if it really started to pull the bottom brick out of the euro wall. If Greece had to leave the euro and that started a trend with other countries that have restructured their economies and really taken a lot of pain on board, if they saw Greece walk away and come out from under their debt and not have to deal with it, you might start a trend, and that would take it would have a big impact on all of our developed world economies if that happened. That said, I don't think it's likely.
Jim, what are your thoughts on Greece? Is it what's the impact on the U.S.? You agree with Madeline?
Oh, absolutely. I liked her answer, as a matter of fact, because everything that people read in the newspapers, Greece has an economy the size of Boston. It's nothing more than a fly speck, so to speak. That's not the case. I think she stated it more eloquently than I could.
Just think of all the commercials it sells on TV, though, scaring people.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Madeline Matlock is Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager with Pioneer Investments. James Miller is Chairman and Investment Advisor at Bartlett. And Local Financial Advisor Chris DeSimeo with Wells Fargo Financial Advisors in Cincinnati. And just as a reminder, the information provided on the show is general in nature, may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up, we will take a look at the history and the mission of the Anna Louise Inn. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.